Previously, the rates charged for default service were capped. Those rate caps were lifted on January 1st, and the last 5 months have seen dramatic change. Today, nearly 20% of PECO's customers are buying their electricity from EGSs, and EGSs serve more than half of PECO's entire customer load. Each day, PECO receives more than 1,000 enrollments from customers switching their generation service from PECO to more than 50 competing suppliers. We believe this is a very promising start for retail competition in our service territory. PECO and Exelon as a whole are staunch advocates for competitive electricity markets at both the wholesale and retail level. We have worked hard to expand competitive market opportunities and to encourage our distribution customers to shop for electric supply. I fully expect the amount of shopping will continue to expand as dozens of suppliers compete for customers. As you know, Exelon participates in energy markets in multiple states, including Pennsylvania, New Jersey, and Texas. Each of these states has a unique retail market design, which has developed from the state's history, regulation, and collaborative stakeholder processes. While each of these markets is different in design, they all provide competitive and reliable service to customers. Exelon appreciates the Commission convening this investigation. We believe that these stakeholder proceedings can provide a forum for a planful and deliberate assessment of proposed changes to the default service model, with the goal of helping customers further realize the benefits of competition. With these thoughts in mind, Exelon recommends that the Commission take two initial steps. First, it should define the specific criteria for a sustainable competitive retail market in Pennsylvania. This is a critical step because it will enable stakeholders to meaningfully assess proposals for change. Second, the Commission should adopt guiding principles for its review of alternative default service models, including the following. One, change should not impose undue risk or unnecessary cost. PECO and its customers have made significant investments to support retail shopping under the current default service model. Any change to a fundamentally different model will require a transition structure that avoids uncertainty and unnecessary cost for customers, EDCs, wholesalers, and retail suppliers. Second, change should be prospective. Any change to the default service model must not break current contracts or undermine future contracts. Concurrent with this investigation, the Commission will also be considering plans for default service after May 31, 2013, and any uncertainty surrounding Pennsylvania's electricity markets could create significant premiums in the wholesale cost of default service supply. Third, change must consider wholesale markets. If an EGS fails to deliver supply to its customers in the PECO service territory, Pennsylvania law and PJM rules require PECO to manage that failure and ensure uninterrupted service to the customers. If the DSP role is shifted from PECO, PECO should not be required to backstop the new DSP. Fourth, customer care and billing functions should remain with the EDCs. Customer care and billing functions should not be transferred to EDCs or third parties at this time. Duplication of these functions by EDSs will likely increase cost and confuse customers and is not necessary to foster the growth of competitive markets. Finally, customers must have the right to choose what product they will buy. Exelon is a strong advocate of customer choice and does not support mechanisms that force customers to receive service with pricing or characteristics that they do not select. Taken together, we believe these five principles will help preserve what has already been accomplished under the Competition Act, while ensuring that changes to the default service model are truly improvements for customers. We look forward to participating fully in the Commission's investigation and improving the retail electric market for our customers and for all Pennsylvanians. I will be happy to answer any questions. Thank you.
Thank you. And now it's my pleasure to introduce Doug Elliott, President of Pennsylvania Operations for First Energy. Doug.
Good afternoon. My name is Doug Elliott, and I am President of Pennsylvania Operations for First Energy. I'm appearing here today on behalf of MedEd, Penelec, Penn Power, and West Penn Power. With the expiration of generation rate caps on December 31, 2010, the companies have successfully transitioned customers to market-based pricing for electricity. While the procedures are now in place for competition to flourish in their service territories, the companies fully support the Commission's effort to determine if there are better or additional ways to bring the benefits of competition or of competitive electric generation markets to Pennsylvania. We share the Commission's objective to foster retail competition throughout the company's service territories and Commonwealth, and look forward to working with the Commission and other interested parties on this endeavor. Any significant changes to the default service model in Pennsylvania would likely require legislative and regulatory reform. The companies are fully prepared to work with interested stakeholders on any additional areas of concerns that the Commission determines needs to be addressed. And while certain enhancements may provide customers the tools they require to leave default service and choose electricity products and services tailored to their individual needs, EGSs must be willing and able to provide such individually tailored electricity products and services. What is the present state of competition in the company service territories? The companies provided detailed statistics with their June 3rd comments regarding the retail choice activity in our service territory. Here are some highlights. We currently have up to 25 available suppliers and up to 51 available brokers, marketers, consultants currently making offers for business customers in the company's service territory. 14.2% of Penn Power's residential customer load is shopping. 63% of Penn Power's commercial customer load is shopping. 81.2% of West Penn Power's commercial customer load is shopping. And over 90% of the industrial load of MedEd, Penelec, and Penn Power is shopping. Based on these statistics, it appears that the default service as currently structured is not impeding the development of a retail competitive market for the industrial and commercial customer classes where shopping is robust. While the companies are supportive of actions and initiatives that would continue to foster competition and increase customer choice, they believe that the Commission should focus its intention and of efforts on the ways to enhance competition for residential customers. Are there barriers to market entry for EGSs? As a general matter, the companies believe the barriers to market entry are minimal, as evidenced by the number of EGSs that have been licensed and are active. The companies acknowledge, however, that Pennsylvania's existing retail market design may have certain features that make it different for EGSs to compete for business. For the most part, the companies have addressed these possible deficiencies, but more can be done, as I will describe in a minute. Many customers do not understand the shopping process or how to determine their price to compare. In response, the companies have engaged in significant customer education and now include the customer's price to compare on its monthly bill, on the customer's website, and for residential customers at papowerswitch.com. Additionally, price transparency is provided with the posting of the company's retail tariffs on their websites. In addition, some customers may be reluctant to shop for the fear that they will be unable to switch back to another EGS or switch back to the default service on a timely basis. The companies have addressed this concern by eliminating minimum stay periods. As a result, customers are free to switch whenever they wish and without limitation. Likewise, some EGSs complained that there were at a competitive disadvantage vis-a-vis the EDC default service providers in serving residential and small commercial customers because they had no way to recover uncollectible accounts expense and therefore had to shoulder that risk of non-payment. In response, each of the companies has implemented a purchase of receivables program for the residential and small commercial classes, which allows EGSs that utilize consolidated billing to sell their receivables to the company at little or no discount. What else can be done to promote electric competition in Pennsylvania? EDCs, as a general rule, do not currently include a profit margin in the provision and pricing of default service. Assuming all other variables be equal, like the generation fuel source, timing of generation procurement, portfolio mix, etc., it has been suggested that an EGS may not be able to effectively compete against a default service price because there is insufficient headroom. For this reason, the companies believe the Commission should consider authorizing default service providers to include an adder in their price to compare. That would increase headroom and therefore enhance competitive posture of the EGSs. Notably, other state models permit a default service provider to include an adder or profit margin in rates. For example, I've advised that such a return adder for default is authorized in Maryland for residential and small customers. In its simplest form, the shareholders of any company, regulated or otherwise, expect some type of return on providing default services. Indeed, absence of the allowance of a return, such entities would logically choose not to provide such services voluntarily. The regulatory and or legislative obligation for an entity to provide a product and or service from the generation assets it does not own should not eliminate it from consideration to a rate of return. To the contrary, the same opportunity should be provided to all default services providers, including EDCs, that fulfill that role. Inclusion of a return adder would work to make a default service product comparable to a competitive offering, therefore allowing EGSs a better chance to compete. The full amount of the return adder need not necessarily be retained by a default service provider. For example, a portion of the return adder could be used to provide additional education to customers regarding shopping alternatives or expand services to low-income customers or to provide an incentive for customers to choose an alternate supplier. Although the companies do not propose a level of return adder at this time, the inclusion of such an adder would noticeably enhance the ability of EGSs to compete against default service. In addition, the companies recommend that all costs billed by PGM interconnect in accordance with rates approved by the Federal Regulatory Commission and are not able to be hedged could also be handled by the regulated companies. For example, such costs as the NITS, RTEP, and the expansion cost recovery, these costs are natural utility charges and are not market-based costs. Therefore, they cannot be hedged. And inclusion of such costs in the price to compare puts unnecessary risk on EGSs. In conclusion, MedEd, Penelec, PennPower, and West Penn share the Commission's objective to foster retail competition throughout their service territories and the Commonwealth, and appreciate the opportunity to submit comments and participate in this en banc hearing, as this is a very important proceeding. The companies are open to potential changes to existing defaults service process that could enhance competition and provide increased benefits to customers. However, it is absolutely imperative that any such change adopted by the Commission or the Pennsylvania General Assembly not place any undue risk or cause financial harm to EDCs serving as the incumbent default service provider. The companies look forward to working with the Commission and other interested parties in this important matter. Thank you very much for the time today.
Thank you, Mr. Elliott. It's my pleasure now to welcome Rich Riazzi, the President and CEO of Duquesne Power and Light.
Thank you, Chairman Paulson. Mr. Chairman, Commissioners, Judge Buckley, my name is Rich Riazzi. I am President and CEO of Duquesne Light Company. I welcome the opportunity to provide the Pennsylvania Public Utility Commission and other interested parties with Duquesne Light's views on the status of retail competition in the Duquesne Light service territory, which encompasses Allegheny and Beaver counties of Pennsylvania. Duquesne Light has served Pittsburgh and its surrounding territory for over 130 years. We are located in the communities we serve and value our relationship with these communities and our customers, and we believe our customers equally value the relationship with the company. Duquesne Light believes that customers should have the option to obtain electric power in a competitive market, and Duquesne Light has a strong and successful track record of supporting the development of competitive markets in many ways. Let me take a moment just to name a few of those. Duquesne Light sold its electric generation as part of restructuring, leading to a reduction of stranded costs, an early exit from generation rate caps in 2002, and providing customers with significant rate reduction. Duquesne Light has developed and implemented in a collaborative fashion a series of polar plans that have evolved as customers in its service territory have become more sophisticated in shopping for power supplies. To our knowledge, Duquesne Light was one of the first utilities in the country to offer hourly pricing to customers over 300 kW, which is one of the lowest thresholds for hourly price service in the United States. Duquesne Light has collaboratively developed since 2002 a series of process improvements designed to facilitate customer choice described in my prepared testimony. Duquesne Light was the first major Pennsylvania electric utility to adopt a purchase of receivable program. To our knowledge, Duquesne Light has had and continues to have levels of shopping that are among the highest in the nation. The recent removal of rate caps on a statewide basis should improve options for additional market entrants and improve options across the entire Commonwealth. Duquesne Light has advanced competition in a deliberate way so as not to expose customers to extreme short-term price volatility before they were comfortable managing that level of risk. Duquesne Light has provided its residential customers with simple, easy-to-compare rates that assure certainty until May of 2013. Duquesne Light has done this while staying true to several key principles. First, the customer should have the fundamental right to affirmatively choose their electric generation supplier. That suggests no auctioning of customers and no opt-out plans. Second, elimination of complex rate structures, demand and declining block rate structures, for example. Create simple rates so smaller customers can compare rates and make shopping comparisons. Recognize the spirit of Act 129 and provide reasonable rate certainty and price stability, especially for residential customers, until they are knowledgeable and comfortable receiving service in the open market. The belief that default service or provider must be governed by some level of PUC oversight that assures consumer rights and protection is afforded. Additionally, as part of our continuous effort to understand the needs and expectations of our customers, we recently surveyed our residential customers to gain an understanding of their awareness of the right to choose an electric supplier. We learned that 91% know they have the right to choose their electric supplier. We learned that 2/3 of all customers are considering now or would consider switching their electric supplier. 1/3 would not switch at this time or did consider it and decided not to switch. Based upon what our residential customers are telling us, a conclusion could be made that 91% know they can shop, 30% have chosen to shop, and 1/3 have decided not to shop. And of those that have or are considering switching, 93% of those stated that the major decision factor or criteria would be price. For the above reasons, and with over 68% of the total load in Duquesne Light service territory currently receiving service from an electric generation supplier, 93% of our industrial load receiving service from electric generation suppliers, and 77% of our commercial load receiving services from electric generation suppliers, and residential shopping numbers that are increasing on a monthly basis Duquesne Light does not believe that a dramatic change is necessary to competitive markets in its service territory. We believe a path of continued improvement rather than significant change is the best approach. We look forward to working with the interested stakeholders in this commission and panel to look for ways to improve the competitiveness of the markets in Pennsylvania. Thank you for the opportunity to share our views with this panel.
Thank you. We'll start off with Commissioner Christie.
Thanks. Just one short question, comment. I think, Dave, on page 11 of your testimony, you referred to a possible way of helping to spur people to shop. And I think, Doug, you mentioned this also by putting in a return adder on top of the default service product that we have. And I appreciate the suggestions on how we could boost shopping. That's an idea that we asked for. But does it really make sense at the end of the day to ask consumers to basically pay a higher default service price than they otherwise would have to pay just to provide a uglier default service price so that people will be maybe more inclined to shop? Is that really the right thing for us to do for consumers?
Well, Commissioner Christie, when we've looked at it, what we feel that that does is it generates more EGSs to be competitive, therefore promote the shopping. So you actually end up with customers in the end saving money and realizing that where they should go is away from the provider of last resort. But it still gives the person that needs that backstop to still have that backstop.
Yeah, and Commissioner Christie, we believe really the underlying issue is that default service rates need to reflect market prices more appropriately. Putting an adder on would be one mechanism to do that. We propose to use that more for consumer education versus some type of margin for the corporation. But by and large, the underlying issue is our recommendation to get default service rates more reflective of current market rates so that there's an even playing field for the companies to compete upon.
Thank you. I share that sentiment in trying to create a level playing field. But when I see adders, it makes me a little nervous that we're starting to artificially subsidize competition, and that's where I get a little concerned. Thank you.
Sure. Thank you. Commissioner Collin.
Let's be clear again. The reason we're going through this effort is really for residential customers. The larger commercial and industrial customers watch their costs very carefully. And I think it's fair to say that electric competition in Pennsylvania has been a resounding success for the larger customers. What we're concerned about is the residential customer. How do we get more of them to shop? And even under the best of circumstances in PPL service territory, only 40% of them are shopping. Mm-hmm. So how do we get the other 60? Or how do we get another 50 or even 40% more of them to shop? And I was going to center on the very sentence which you just repeated, although I didn't hear it the first time. You said, David DeCampley, regulatory measures presently within the PUC authority should align default service rates more closely with current market prices and ensure default rates fully reflect true supply costs. Mm-hmm. So I ask again, is there any magic in having the electric distribution company do that? Why couldn't we do like Texas has done, which I think I heard Chairman Smitherman say, where the very largest, what we would call electric generation suppliers, are affiliates of the very largest electric distribution companies? In other words, you all have subsidiaries. You all have electric generation suppliers, correct?
Yes. We have a electric generation supplier, but it does not own any generation.
All right. I didn't ask whether they own generation or not. Okay. But the point is, what if we would replace the electric distribution company with a group of your electric generation suppliers? Would we gain anything by that, or would it, Dennis, would it impose undue risks or costs or uncertainty?
Commissioner, I'll take a crack at that first here.
I think we can make a lot of models work. There are models in all of the states around us that are different. I think the key really is that through this stakeholder process, there's a very planful and deliberate approach to that that keeps the customer in mind, and that we make sure there's a good transition structure to get there. I think many models will work. We see, I've four states that we deal with, and we deal with many more. Illinois, Texas, Pennsylvania, New Jersey, all have different models. I think you can make any of them work. It's really about just the transition to getting there.
David? Commissioner Cawley, we firmly believe that how default service is structured is far more important or influential than who provides it. So, but for some suggestions to improve default service, we believe any entity could provide it. And we're indifferent to that. So it's far more important how it's structured than who supplies it.
Well, it seems to me that all of your EGSs are going to be very financially strong. Maybe not as strong as the EDC, but I think it's pretty safe to say all of them would provide reliable generation service. The two biggest misconceptions that we see as barriers to residential customer switching are, number one, dear old PPL, dear old PECO, dear old First Energy, dear old Duquesne. I'm so loyal to them. They've been so wonderful over the years. I don't want to be disloyal and switch. David, we did a commercial about this. Mm-hmm. You all are indifferent. We don't let you make any money on the electricity. Am I right? Correct. I think everybody, please nod your head.
That is correct, sir.
Good. So you're indifferent. PPL yes. likes to use the word, we're indifferent who your supplier is. Mm-hmm. Second misconception is, I just know if I choose an alternative supplier, electric utility, my distribution company, will restore me last if my service goes out. Not true. We hold you all to metrics to get your service restored, what have you. So there are misconceptions. So if we had everyone, I hate to use the word force, because we're not going to force anybody, but let's say that we impressed on everyone, or we created a situation where everyone chose an electric supplier, so they don't have to worry about their service not being restored or what have you, because they've already made the switch. They're used to dealing with an electric supplier now. And then, as we heard the chairman from Texas say, once they make the leap, boy, this is great. And they don't just switch once, they tend to their affairs. Not everybody. There is the problem, as Commissioner Christie mentioned, where people don't tend to their affairs and don't monitor their prices over the course of a year, and they don't switch again, and they end up paying a price maybe that's higher than the default price. I think we have to assume that most people must be under a requirement to tend to their affairs, and that we shouldn't necessarily build public policy around those who don't. But again, how do we align market prices closer to default service? And it seems to me that you could do it just as well with financially strong electric generation suppliers than you can with electric distribution companies. Am I right?
Yes. Yes, you're right. It doesn't have to be the EDC that provides the service.
Would you just as soon be out of the default service business, since we don't let you make any money at it? And yet you have to hire all these people to do all this competitive bidding?
Well,
go ahead.
The concern, Chairman Cawley, is if we're out of the business, the default service business, is the consumer have some other way to make sure that they have a backstop? And that's really what this hearing's about and what the review's about, and that's why we support it, because we don't know what the next model is. We have to see that first. But what we do know is we support the idea that we need to look at default service. You know, we understand part of the concern is that customers aren't shopping on the residential side. They are in the commercial industrial. But some of it is because it is so new. Even though the market's been in place for a long time, it really hasn't at Penelec, MedEd, and West Penn Power. It's only been in place for 6 months, not even 6 months if you, because you take that first month to get in place. So it has hardly been in place. Yes, some of the reasons you say that customers aren't shopping, that is some of the myths that are out there. But I think one of the biggest myths we got to deal with is they might not care to look and take time. And that's what we've got to figure out, how to get around that, because they should care. Customers should care about, can I save money? But a lot of education that you put out, if there is a gap there for EGSs to go after, and it's larger, then they get more to shop. For example, Penn Power, or for example, PPL. But when you deal with three of our companies that we deal with, West Penn, Penelec, and MedEd, because of the efficient job that we did on achieving the provider of last resort default service price, there isn't a lot of headroom for EGSs right now to get in there and go after those customers. And I think it's more, how do you get customers interested when there isn't that much on the table? Not so much, I don't see it as much that they're worried about the EDC anymore getting their service back on quickly, and they we won't if they switch. I don't hear that. What I hear is I just don't want to take time to shop. I don't want to spend that time looking and figuring out the market, even through all the education. So we need to, you know, we need to do more education and make it simpler as part of it, but we also need to find a way to put some sort of differential between default service, no matter who has it, and what an EGS can offer.
Well, I heard the small business advocate say it really is none of government's business to be pushing, or what was the word? Forcing or pressuring was the word. I mean, is it a function of this commission to promote electric choice if we believe it's in customers' best interest? I think yes.
Yes.
I don't want to pressure them. I want to at least get them to the water and get them to taste it if I can, because I think that is a legitimate function of government.
Yeah, I'd like to more directly answer your previous question and say that given the right consumer protections and the right thoughtful transition, PPL Electric Utilities would prefer to focus itself on what it does extremely well, and that's customer servicing and infrastructure management, and not procurement of energy for customers. So to your question, we would prefer to not be in that business, but there's a lot of transitional and thoughtful things that would have to be considered.
Well, I'll speak for myself. I agree with you. I would rather see the legislative intent as I think it is. It was the intent that the distribution company would do distribution. You were to be the wires company, and you were to let somebody else sell the electricity. And you were to be, if absolutely necessary, there was going to be a small residue of customers that you would have to protect by getting them service.
Mm-hmm.
But I would rather see all of you spend your time on your core business, and that is distribution, and not be wasting resources on getting service for people who don't want to shop when it's really in their interest to shop.
I would just like to add a few things, if I might. I think I agree with all of my colleagues here that this is about transition. I agree that utilities in the T&D business, the wires business, need to focus on that core business. But I think, as we talked about, this is all about transition. And when we think about particular market areas or service territories, there can be unique circumstances out there. And sometimes one model doesn't fit all. And what I would suggest as we take a look at this and we go through this process is to consider some of the programs that are existing and how successful they are or aren't. And as I articulated a little bit earlier, if you think about from Duquesne's perspective, the series of adjustments we've made to our polar programs that started out with a longer-term fixed price down to hourly prices in the commercial and industrial, which I know we talked about are robust right now. Those programs were designed to transition those customers and protect them from price shocks that could occur, anomalies in the marketplace, as they learned and became more comfortable to deal with that risk. As we're looking at our residential plan, the POLR program we have there, we are following that same path of slowly coming back and shortening the period of time as we see performance in the marketplace. We try to base our decisions as best we can on the best information that we have available to us. So, as I mentioned a bit earlier, we actually went out and surveyed our customers so that we can determine what, in fact, may be perceived as a myth and what was actually a fact in the minds of the customer. And some of the things that I mentioned earlier, over 90% are aware that they have choice, 93% have listed price as the single most important factor, but also some of the data we learned out there is that name affiliation wasn't important as we thought it was between affiliates. We also learned that the preponderance of our customers through that survey understand that they will get the same reliability and the same treatment and service restoration whether they were with the utility under its provider of last resort status or not. So one of the reasons we do those surveys is to understand the effectiveness of the dollars that we're spending on our advertising programs to make sure that we are, in fact, educating on the right things and people can make a wise choice at the end of the day. So as we look at some of the numbers that we have and compared ourselves with the programs in transitioning, if you will, away from transitioning our market, if you will, to the competitive market, getting a larger percentage shopping, some of the statistics that we looked at, if you compare us around the country, is that if you take a look at our particular service territory, we have about 25 active retailers. Some have more, but some of the more successful ones are in that range. If you take a look at our total load that switched, as I articulated earlier, we're at 68%. Some of the benchmark territories in the country, if you will, are at 70% or so. If you take a look at the percentage of our industrial, they're in line in commercial with others. If you take a look at our residential, as we mentioned earlier, we're at 30%. Obviously, we're not there yet, but when we look at the increased switching rate, if switching continues at its current rate and acceleration level, we would be in that 60 to 70% range within 12 to 15 months. So we see a transition in our residential program following what it did in our commercial and industrial programs as well. As we look at other areas in the country, as they were ramping up and seeing that type of switching, some of those areas experienced through their price to compare programs.
Can you hold on for a moment, please?
I would also ask you to wrap up.
I'm going to right now.
Thanks.
So as I was saying, in some of those other areas, there were significant increases in those costs. You know, somewhere you can take a look at, they range differently by area, but 60 to 70%. When we take a look at our price to compare over comparable periods of time, it's been in the 10% or less range. So we feel from the standpoint of trying to produce a product that protects the customer as they learn about the market, that we're hitting the marks in some of those areas, and we are seeing the switching rates that are growing through time. So,
great. Vice Chairman Coleman.
I'll go back to my question I asked the last panelist, and David, this question is directed to you regarding your commercial and industrial customers and those final few percentage of load that are still remaining on default service, I guess about 2% of that and about 20% on the commercial side. Explanation for that?
Yeah, we've taken a look at the large commercial and industrial, which would be 98% service through a alternative supplier with 2% remaining. That's about 150 of our customers still remaining. And there's a combination of factors. Number one, they may have chosen, and some have chosen to remain on our real-time pricing product, which is one of our default supply options for industrial customers because they believe that is their best price mechanism. So that's some of them. Others have been credit challenged and have been unable to secure a supplier in today's market. Some are very small load or either out of service or in business stasis and really not playing actively. And lastly, a good number of them are actually generators. So they're unique customer characteristic types of customers, And that combination is about that 150 that are not shopping in that sector right now.
Maybe a softball question for each of you. The Pennsylvania model, from your perspective, is it working and just needs tweaking, or is there another model out there that you would suggest that the commission focus its attention on?
Anybody?
I'll go first. I was waiting. Vice Chairman, I'll go first then. I think that's a good question. I think that's why you have this panel together and you're going through these hearings. You know, the Pennsylvania model is working to some degree. It's not perfect by far. I applaud the commission, and we applaud the commission for taking a look at the Texas model or for something in between. Commissioner Cawley put it right. It's the residential side that we're more, you know, worried about and understanding why you don't see switching there. And so I think that's why you're going through the hearings to really determine that. And we support it fully.
I'll offer that I think it's really important that we continue to assess the model as we move forward, and that we assess it against the criteria. Is it sustainable? Some of that would look like what are the barriers to entry and exit, and assess against that. Is it sustainable, meaning can the retail providers, marketers, stay in the market through the whole market cycle? That's another way to assess it. Are the customers informed and do they understand it? And what is the ease of switching? But I think it's a really healthy thing for us to get the stakeholders together to assess the market and figure out what are the adjustments that need to be made.
Thank you again to the panelists for committing your time with us today.
Thank you, Vice Chairman Coleman. Commissioner Gardner.
Thank you, Chairman. In the interest of time, I'm going to be somewhat brief. I think that I will agree with what I think I'm hearing, that the companies before us are doing a stellar job in the business of infrastructure management and customer service. And I applaud you for it. And that is something that I think that is something that we should aspire to keep you in. However, on the energy supply, I think that I'm going to have a problem with the EDC being the default supplier. I think that the current model, as I've heard, has some serious defects. The analogy that I use typically is that the EDCs have to have a warehouse where they have power stored for all customers on an as-needed basis. That is an unnecessary cost and burden to put on ratepayers, and I'd like to see that repaired. As to some type of an adder to the default rate, for whatever reasons, I'd also have a real problem with that. Thank you, Chairman.
Thank you, Commissioner Gardner. And I will be very brief in my comments or questions, excuse me. And, David, these are directed at you. As you know, at I guess it was two public meetings ago, we had our first of what I'll call a series of unintended consequences associated with PPL Electric being in the default supply business. So my question to you is, yes, you have it. The question was, have you experienced any unintended consequences? And I think the answer is yes. What are the costs associated with PPL fulfilling its default service role? And it picks up on Commissioner Gardner's point.
The costs? Well, there's the administrative costs associated with us being in the business of procuring and managing a portfolio of supply. That in itself has been one of the underlying reasons of some of the unintended consequences. For instance, our most recent price changes on June 1st revealed a small commercial price of over 13 cents a kilowatt hour, a 4-cent change from May 31st to June 1st. And that's tied back to the reconciliation and full recovery for the utility being in this business. And really the underlying reasons for that are the sharing of the administrative costs over a changing number of customers that remain in that classification and some of the early in the cycle proration issues that we run into. So we've seen this price variation occurring, and we're essentially out of market with our price right now for small commercial customers, which is not a good place to be. We're not reflecting market. What it also has revealed is something very interesting. Customers are responding to price signals. So our customers, when they see this type of change in pricing, are fleeing away from default supply on the commercial side right now. So we see them responding to price signaling, which is a very, very beneficial attribute as a result of this. But certainly this reconciliation process is something that would need to be fixed no matter who handles default supply in the future.
And picking up on that, I mean, you heard Chairman Smitherman talk about the Texas model, that you have the wires and poles company, the generators, and the retail energy suppliers. I really, I share this with you. I know we have a very prescriptive measure in Act 129, but I'll throw this out to the four of you, and I commended you earlier in my introductory comments, but I mean, do you really think you're the provider of choice when it comes to things like real-time pricing? Or should that be a function of the retail energy suppliers?
I clearly believe that should be a function of the competitive retail supply marketplace. We struggle with that. Our time-of-use price has created another one of these anomalies in the market where we've had to reconcile that on June 1st as well, creating a way out of market price for our customers. And getting in the business now of working directly marketing 21,000 customers to assure they know what's happening and to help move them off of that rate. It's just not a business that we are accustomed to being in, and it should be left to the alternative retail marketplace.
We absolutely agree.
I want to thank you again for joining us and appreciate your comments here. I would ask that our final panel, the electric generation suppliers, please get assembled. We're about 10 minutes behind schedule, so we're going to move quickly here.